Do you eat, sleep, and breathe golf? Do you love to explore? And most importantly, do you just want to have some fun? Well, then welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren, brought to you by MesquiteGolfPackages.com. Now here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence, and the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Well, here we are once again. Welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren. I'm Mitch Lawrence in Myrtle Beach. Darren Bunch out there on the West Coast in Bakersfield, California. But we are going to talk the world of golf today with good friend Brian Orr, golf photographer extraordinaire. Darren?
Drink. What are we drinking?
We're drinking Cardew 12-year-old. In honor of Brian Orr, golf photographer extraordinaire.
That's exactly what I have as well. I'm drinking it out of this beautiful Brora whiskey snifter that Brian has been to Brora with us. It is an outstanding place to play golf. If people don't know where Brora is, they should get on the Googles and find out, and then they should make every effort to go to Scotland and play it.
All right, we're going to get to Brian's Emergency 9 in just a second. We're glad you found us at golfnewsnet.com and on iTunes podcasts and Audio Boom. Boom.
Boom.
Great places to download the podcast, listen to them whenever you want. You can find Darren on the social medias, at Getaways Golf on Twitter, at Golf Getaways on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram, at Mitch Lawrence, L-A-U-R-A-N-C-E. And before we get to the Emergency 9, once again, we want to thank MesquiteGolfPackages.com for their sponsorship. And who better to talk to on this Emergency 9 than the family owner and locally operated operator, Brian Orr, who is indeed MesquiteGolfPackages.com, in addition to all the great photography that he does. What can you say about Mesquite? 7 great courses, Conestoga, Wolf Creek, which everybody knows about, a lot of other ones, golf, gaming options. Mesquite's about an hour north of Vegas, and it's just a great, great place. And if you go to MesquiteGolfPackages.com, they can hit you with itineraries, all shapes, all sizes, all budgets are in the mix. So just go MesquiteGolfPackages.com. You can plan your next memorable golf getaway today. And Brian, I know we've talked about Mesquite, Darren and I have, and certainly you are incredibly familiar with it. Just a quick hit on why it's so special.
Well, you know, the cool thing about Mesquite is it is only about an hour from Las Vegas. And one thing that people may not know is that Mesquite, actually, the 7 golf courses are only 5 minutes apart from each other. I mean, literally, like, you're only from one end to the other, you're only 5 minutes to the other golf course, if that. So that's a pretty cool, unique feature to Mesquite, is it's all right there. You really only have to drive just a teeny bit. Some of the hotels offer shuttle service. But the other cool fact too, is that if you're coming in for a trip like that, you can hit great courses in Vegas on the way in and on the way out. And if you have the time, man, you got to take the time to go up into St. George, because the landscape completely changes. You go up by Zion National Park, you get red rocks, you get red sand. It's really a unique and amazing part of the country, especially to play golf in. And we've been doing it for 12 years. We know the place like the back of our hand, and come on out and we'll help you out. So log onto our website or give us a call.
What a great, great recommendation. And, you know, normally you hear from people who may have been there once or twice. This is from the man. He lives there. He knows the area as well. And it's just a fantastic group of places to go and play golf. All right. Brian Orr, photographer, golf photographer extraordinaire.
Drink.
Hurry up, Darren. And you can find him in a number of ways. At Brian Orr on Instagram, at Brian Orr Golf on Twitter, and of course on his website, brianorr.com. And if you go to any of them, you will see someone who not only is a golfer, but a lover of golf courses. You cannot take photographs like the kind Brian does unless you are a lover of golf courses as well. So we're thrilled to have Brian back with us here for his Emergency 9. Brian, are you ready for this, man? This is a tough test.
Oh, man, I am. I'm scared and I'm shaking in my boots.
We try to take our guests who take the Emergency 9 back to third grade, as if someone just said, you're going to the principal's office. That's what Darren and I try to do here.
Spent a lot of time there. I know that I got the feeling.
All right, good. So let's get to your first question. And that, of course, is your favorite course and or destination anywhere in the world.
I think that this should be broken down into categories for me, because there's so many great destinations in the world, and I don't know if anybody else would feel this way, but I mean, you've got kind of differences between links golf, modern golf courses, desert golf courses. But putting all that aside and to try to make it simple, this list change and my thoughts change after different experiences, but we all had the pleasure to roll around Scotland last year, and we saw some pretty amazing places and had some quite a bit of fun. But two courses really, really stuck with me and still have. And the first one is Castle Stewart, and the second one was Brora. And those two golf courses really, really blew me away just as a whole and for a lot of different reasons. But Castle Stewart has got to be, is at the top of my list currently. It's such a fun golf course, and it is so beautiful. And the intricacies of the design and the bunkering, and just, it just was so much fun. I could play it over and over and over and over again. And then secondly, Brora. Wow. I had never really heard of this golf course. I don't think too many people really have. I mean, unless you're an architecture buff or really, really know your history of golf, you probably have never heard of it. But it was one of the coolest golf experiences I've ever had the pleasure to do. A very simple golf course, it's all very simple. And the sheep roaming around on the golf course, it just is an exceptional experience. And I can't say enough about it, and I can't wait to go back.
Obviously, two of our favorites, and Castle Stewart just continues to blow my mind when I think about it and the 36 holes we played that day. I really haven't encountered any place other than maybe Gamble Sands here in the U.S. that has just so much width on the golf course, but at the same time is so strategic, and you can score well or you can get yourself in a heap of trouble, but it's just a fun, fun golf course to play, and I think as more and more people discover it, it's going to keep climbing the charts. That said, we want to, obviously your golf travel bucket list doesn't have that part of Scotland on it anymore. And there are lots of places that you've played, lots of places you've shot. We've talked a whole episode about Caveira in Los Cabos. What's at the top of your golf travel bucket list? Where do you want to go that you haven't been?
Well, again, this, I think you've got, it comes into categories for me, but I'm very visual with the stuff that really gets me. And, you know, obviously everybody's got their big time bucket listers, some attainable, some not attainable. Obviously everybody would like to play Cypress and the big, you know, Pine Valley and Augusta, but those aren't really on the table. So if I had to put that into consideration, I mean, I think Cape Kidnappers looks incredible. I think Loft and Links looks incredible. I think Thracian Cliffs, Kiowa Island or Kiowa itself, and also the new Cabot Cliffs. I mean, I've been there, but Cabot Cliffs looks very interesting too. So I've kind of got a few, but those would be some of the tops.
That's a pretty good bucket list right there. If you just work on the different places you'd have to go to get to all those, that would take up some time. You'd be good. That's what bucket lists are for. That's what they're for.
I think you're right. You know, and again, it kind of could possibly get broken into categories, which it should be, because all of those places are probably a long ways away from each other. But, and it's also more a lot about the topography and what it looks like in the photography that I have seen. So those kinds of things, you know, I put it in the back of my mind and I'm like, wow, what could I do there? What kind of photography could I shoot there? I mean, it just sounds fun to me. It's what gets my motor running.
Well, maybe you could do a cliffs trip, and that way you could knock off Cabot Cliffs and Thracian Cliffs.
Yeah, Cape Kidnappers has its own set of cliffs, too.
I was just talking about cliffs in the title.
Yeah, I know.
That's fine.
It's a
bucket list. We can wish all we want. All right, we'll be hopefully with you when you go to all those places. I know that's Darren and my wish.
I hope so. I hope we can make those happen, because they would be fun places to visit, and I know that there's got to be other great golf around those other ones.
All right, let's move on from the places we play golf to the places we stay golf. What's the best place you've ever stayed?
There's some good ones, that's for sure. And it makes a huge difference in your overall experience, I think, when you do travel. But I have a couple on here, because I don't know if I can really narrow down one, but I guess maybe they're also categorized, but the first that really comes to mind, that's one of the most incredible places I've ever stayed. I've stayed there a couple times, and it's St. Regis Princeville. Princeville Resort sits on these cliffs overlooking Hanalei Bay and over the famed Bali High. And the sunsets that happen there and the views from the room and the way the rooms are done, it's incredible. It's paradise. It really is paradise. And of course, they have a great golf course there on property at the Mackay Princeville Golf Course. So that's the one that really kind of sticks in my mind for one place. I'll mention a couple others quickly. The Grand Del Mar in San Diego is as upscale as it gets. The Cabot accommodations stick in my mind as very, very impressive and memorable. And I think you guys have agreed with my last one. And I'm trying to remember the name of it. And I was searching back through my records and I couldn't find the name. I believe it started with an M, but the castle that we stayed in.
Kincardine Castle. Is that how you say it, Mitch?
Yeah, it's. I always said Kincardine, but Kincardine, however.
You're a lot better at that than the rest of us.
You just care about staying. You don't care about pronouncing it.
Well, even though it wasn't like, you know, I mean, it wasn't this, you know, grand, amazing, you know, upscale place. It was so unique that it looking back on it, it was so cool. I mean, it was.
What I like about this list, Bri, is that the places you've mentioned, there's kind of a discrepancy. Obviously, some grand places, like you said, St. Regis and Grand Del Mar, very, you know, high end. And then you've got Cabot, which is in a very small town, very small scale, but so sticks with you after you've been there.
Yeah, just because, I mean, in Cabot, it was so simple, but so perfectly done. I mean, just every the little details of the way it was presented was just fantastic and so comfortable. And you just wanted to stay there.
And let's give a little shout out to the St. Regis Princeville, Mitch. You will know this from the story I've told many times, but it is the place that saved the Frankenspoon once upon a time. I was playing the Mackay course and playing that little par three over the water. The head flew off of my Frankenspoon hickory driver, or I guess it's a hickory spoon, obviously. And I needed a way to fix it. And we were staying at the St. Regis, and I had the butlers, because we were in the rooms that had butler service. And I asked one of the butlers if they would go into Hanalei and find me some Gorilla Glue so I could put it back together. And I literally put that golf club back together in my room that night and played with it for, I think, 2 years until the three of us took a trip to Las Vegas and it broke for good, went to a dirt-like desert grave out in Las Vegas. So
I guarantee you that is the only explanation that Princeville and the St. Regis will get relative to Gorilla Glue in a recap of that place.
That's right. All right, Brian, what is the single best thing you've ever eaten on a trip and where?
So I got a couple. I can't just name one. It just doesn't draw down to one to one specific experience. I've had too many good ones. So I'm going to mention Kivira right off the bat, because I haven't been anywhere else that they've done that. The first comfort station is awesome. And then you get to the second one and you're like, well, okay, I'm going to hang out here for an hour or so, maybe longer. And then when I circle back around, I'm going to hit it again and hang out for a little bit longer. Kivira is great. But if I wanted to talk about like the best thing I've ever eaten, it was at the restaurant at the Grand Del Mar called Addison. And it's by Chef William Bradley. And we had a chef tasting menu, me and my wife. And it literally was 8 to 10 dishes of pure bliss. Everything was, I'm not even really sure everything that was on the menu. I mean, they told me at one point, but it was all incredible from start to finish. I don't even know how to explain it. It was just a show. I mean, I've never had a culinary experience again like that. I've been to a lot of nice places, but this place is off the charts good and amazing. And if you get the chance, you should go.
I think pure bliss pretty much covers it, don't you, Darren?
Yeah, exactly. And I got to say, having eaten at both of the places he mentioned, at Kivira, I mean, I ate my fill of shrimp tacos, fish tacos, anything that they would make at that little comfort station when you come off the eighth green, you go toward the ninth tee. I mean, I just ate myself silly. We drank margaritas in there, top shelf margaritas. It was outstanding. But Addison's as well. I've been there, and they make this kind of puff pastry bread type of thing, and I literally was stealing them off of other people's plates who weren't eating theirs because I liked it so much. So
it's funny you mentioned that, Darren, because those puff pastry things, we mentioned that to them. And when my wife and I got back to the room, about an hour later, a personal delivery from Addison came down and said, "Chef thought that that you guys might want a couple more of these."
Can you call them now and tell them that I really want one?
Have them ship it to you. FedEx it to you.
Yeah, can you FedEx me some of those, Chef? He's a great follow on Instagram, by the way. I think it's Chef William Bradley, at Chef William Bradley.
Nice. Yeah, I had a similar experience there where, you know, I kept raving about them and I was trying to talk people out of theirs. And the server had told me, well, they only make a limited, they're made to order essentially. So they only make a limited number of them. And they were trying to move us through the meal. Obviously, there was lots of great dishes coming. And I said, boy, I could just eat those forever. And the chef did something real similar. When we left, just as we were, you know, getting up to walk out and go to the after party, so to speak, of this dinner we were having, he just brought me a baggie that had about four or five of them, and I just nibbled on them for the rest of the night. It was outstanding.
You do realize that we've talked more about the best thing you've ever eaten than we have about anything else in this Emergency Nine.
As well it should be.
Which tells me a lot about both of you.
If you've been to Addison, you will understand. So you better put that on your eating bucket list, Mitch.
All right, it's there already. Now, we're getting to your fifth question. The first four you have been unable to limit to one answer. So here in your fifth, it's all right. We don't take points away here. You may have to stay after school, but we don't take points away. Besides the actual golf, what's the most important thing to you on a trip?
I do only have one answer for this.
Ding, 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 ding.
And it's ding, ding, ding. All right. So, and it comes down to the accommodations for me. If I'm not comfortable where I'm staying, I'm not going to have a great trip. It's going to be a pain in the ass. So you got to be comfortable. You can't have a smoking room or a smelly room unless you smoke or like to smell. you've got to sleep well. And if there's an interesting or a cool aspect connected to the property or something unique about it, it makes it that much better. Now, there are places that can be forgettable, like just like a chain hotel, which is great. I mean, it can be more than adequate. And that's kind of what I'm getting at, is that it's got to be to a certain level where you're comfortable, you're happy, you can connect to the Wi-Fi, you can kick your feet up and watch ESPN for a minute. Or it's got to just have such uniqueness to it that you can wrap your head around, I've never stayed anywhere like this before. You know what I mean? So I think that it really comes down to the accommodations that are important to me on a trip.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we all agree on that, you know, and just different parts of the accommodations are more important to some of us than others. Obviously, showers are very important to me. Beds are important to other people. But it is the overall accommodations are crucial, especially if you're on one of these trips that, you know, we do a lot of trips where we go somewhere and we stay for 4 or 5 days. And we do a lot of trips where you're moving every night. And really on those ones where you're moving every night, you got to have a good room every time. Otherwise, you'll go insane.
Yeah, it can be a struggle when you don't get a good room. And I know we've all experienced that too. We won't mention anything, but yeah, it's great when you check in somewhere and you're like, all I want to do is go to sleep or whatever, take a shower. I mean, you feel relieved and then you're refreshed to move on to the next.
Yep, definitely. All right, Brian, so what's the one piece of golf apparel or equipment you'd recommend to everyone?
All right, I didn't get the equipment on there.
Yeah, we've added the equipment because a lot of people have ventured toward equipment when they answer the question. I prefer it to be apparel because I think there's a lot of different apparel that people love, and we've had some really, really interesting answers lately.
Cool, that's great, man. Well, if it had to be equipment, I'd say, man, everybody's got to have a Mashie.
But
that's not my
well, you won't get any argument from the two of us.
I know. So the piece of apparel that is really, I mean, I didn't have to think too hard about this one, but for years and years and years, I have had an issue finding a belt that would work for me anywhere. It works on the golf course. It works for regular dress. It works casually. And I'd searched forever, and I just couldn't find one that was cool. It wouldn't fit right, or I'd have to put an extra hole in it, or it was one side or the other. It was too golfy. It was too skatish. It was too dressy, whatever. But I finally found the most amazing belt, and these guys are – they got to be killing it because it's an amazing product. The belt is called Next Belt. I don't know if you guys have one or if you've seen them, but Next Belt, and they have this – I assume it's proprietary. They have this ratcheting system that you tighten the belt with, and you can size it to exactly how you want it to be sized. And the coolest thing about the golf versions is that there's like a Batman utility belt flip down ball marker, magnetic ball marker that flips down from the buckle and holds the ball marker.
Do not get Bunch started on this. You've hit a nerve.
Yeah, I've become a Next Belt fan because of watching you. I don't remember where we were, but I kept watching you flip that little thing on your belt buckle, and finally I asked you, dude, what is that belt you've got? And you told me about Next Belt, and it took me a while to come around on it and, you know, sit down and actually order it, but I will never own another belt in my life. I've got a brown strap, a black strap, and a white strap, and one belt buckle to go with them, the cool X-Factor belt buckle in red and silver, and I absolutely love it. In fact, on my Emergency 9 that we did back in Episode 2, that my answer was Next Belt as well. So we're on the same page there, and I owe it all to you.
Yeah, man, I've been so stoked since I found that belt. And I tell you, every time I put it on, something in the back of my mind goes, this belt's awesome.
Yeah.
This is heartwarming. You are brothers in belt. I just realized.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Hashtag Next Belt Brothers.
Okay, next question. And Darren and I kind of know this, but share it, because we talk a lot about playing from different tees, you know, what the golf course offers you based on what your handicap and your what yardage you like to play. Just share with our listeners. Yours is kind of a hickory handicap now, as it were. What yardages, and we know this, but where do you like to play and why?
Obviously, with playing hickories, I've been kind of a purist from the beginning, but and hadn't really been too into handicaps and doing all of that. I mean, at one point in time, I think I did have a handicap down around seven, but or seven or eight or something like that. But it didn't really matter. I mean, it's just a number. So now being a hickory player, again, I don't think yardage really matters for us, because I believe Darren and I have played. And I think you—I don't know—you might not have been with us, Mitch, but we've played anywhere from—I think we've played down to just over 4,000 yards, all the way to probably 6,500. So I think that really it's more about picking a yardage that allows you to have fun on the golf course and not have to hit long clubs into every single green. So that being said, nowadays, Even when I go back and play modern clubs, I'm trying to play 6,000 yards, maybe 6,200 at max, and even that kind of pushes it sometimes. But less than 6,000 yards, and I think that I'm not sure I'll play anything longer unless I'm drunk or something. But typically that would make me go forward a tee if I was. But yeah, I am not a big fan of hitting it miles and miles anymore. I've always liked playing more of a finesse game and try and hit fun shots and have fun on the golf course, which I believe you get any longer than about 6,200 yards and you're starting to push most people's ability.
One of the other things too is the fact that we play so much match play now. I mean, Brian and I play an annual match that goes on the length of the year where we're keeping total score and we're keeping match play score. Mitch and I almost exclusively play match play. And when you do that, you don't have to worry so much about what the yardage is. Because even if you do end up on a long hole, a 580-yard par 5 or something like that, you're both playing it. you know, you're both just trying to beat the other guy on that specific hole. But you're right, and we've talked about it a lot on the podcast over our episodes about the fact that you and I played at Tobacco Road, and we played it from, I think it was 4,600 on the very, very forward tees, and just had an insanely good time out there with owner Mark Stewart. You know, trying to drive par fours, and all the par fives, you know, were reachable in two, and still some of the par threes ended up being, you know, decent length. And I think that's the mark of good design too, that you can play golf courses from any number of different yardages. So that is awesome. And obviously we're all kindred spirits when it comes to that. Your eighth question, I'm pretty sure I probably know the answer to, and I think it might be a cop-out, like Mitch's is a cop-out to this answer, but who is your favorite golfing partner and why?
Okay, so I'll get a little bit of a two-part answer here. So it depends on the venue and the situation. So first of all, you two clowns are pretty fun to play golf with.
That is so poetic. That's beautiful, Ben.
You guys are fun. You guys are competitive, which is great. You guys can be silly and ridiculous and hit shitty shots and still have fun with it and hit great shots and be, you know, complimentary. And, you know, so you guys get the camaraderie of the game. And that's what it comes down to for me, really, in a experienced golf situation. Plus, you guys' personalities are easy to get along with. So there's the first answer. The second answer comes to something that I've just recently been able to really experience. And in this last year, I've been able to get on the golf course with my daughters. They have just barely introduced to the game. And so without trying to just punish them into learning how to swing and, you know, make it a slog fest for this little kid out there, I have taken them to the golf course and taken them onto the golf course, enticing them with driving the golf cart. So here, the way they see golf currently is that when we go to the golf course, we get to drive on the golf course racetrack. we get to see bunnies in the bunkers, and we get to play in the bunkers, and then we get to go have milkshakes and French fries.
Wait, are you sure you're not talking about Darren?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Hey, man. Golf has got to be fun, and that's what it's all about. So milkshakes and French fries should be part of every golf experience. So it's been really cool for me to go out with my daughters and, you know, have those experiences and have them laugh about the bunnies on the golf courses and run through the bunkers and build a little sandcastle in the bunker. And in between all of that, they can hit shots and putt and do the golf stuff. I'm really not trying to get too technical with them because I don't want to push them into, you know, just technical stuff at this point in their lives. But I think that's been a favorite of mine lately is, you know, when I do get to go out with my little daughters, they are a joy to watch and be with on the golf course because I'm sharing something that I love, yet they're learning just how to be on the golf course and appreciate the what fun you can have on the golf course. So I think that that's an interesting answer at this point in my life.
I think it's a much better answer than me and Darren, personally.
Definitely that. But for the listeners, Brian, it's Casey and Sydney, right? And what are their ages?
Sydney just turned 7 and Casey is 11.
Well, that's good. I think that's a lot better than, you know, Mitch always talks about playing with his wife and how great it is. And I give him a hard time about it, although it does sound very special. And I think it's a lot of fun, you know, the fact that they have this ongoing lifetime match. And I know that your wife also plays golf and loves the game too. So, you know, but you surprised me with the daughter's answer.
I could have gone to the wife and she knows that I love playing golf with her and we love playing golf together and it's fun. But I think I think that it, when I thought about that, it struck me that, you know what, I had some interesting experiences with my two daughters last year. And I thought it was interesting that now they're just like, oh, we get to, we're going to drive on the golf cart racetrack. I mean, they think it's like Mario Kart. They love, you know, driving the golf cart. And there's these bunnies in the bunkers out here. There's rabbits everywhere in St. George. And then we do our traditional milkshakes and fries and sometimes cheeseburgers. And they love it. And that's like the experience that I had when I was growing up with my grandma. You know, when she'd take me to the golf course early in the morning and get some pancakes and bacon or sausage. And, you know, they probably were horrible food. It probably sucked, but I mean, I loved it, you know?
See, it all comes back to the food again, Darren.
That's right. And pancakes and bacon are responsible, clearly, then, for the fact that we have to putt out everything that we play with, Brian, even all the way down to 2-inch putts, because there are no gimmies in our game anywhere, anytime. And it's funny, we've been places, and one of the places I remember most vividly was we were on the 18th at Trump National in L.A., and we decided we were going to play from the very back tee box, which is this volcano-like tee box. And we hit our balls up there into the fairway, and Brian had hit his over this little wall. So it was playable up there, but we had to find it. And the marshal happened to come along at the time, and he's talking to us, and he's helping us look for it. And he goes, "Well, you can just take a drop right here." And I looked at him, and I said, "No, no, no, he cannot. That will never be allowed. There are no drops. There are no free drops. There's no play it as lateral if that's not it." You know, and he had hit a second ball off the tee because we play provisionals anyway. But it's funny how people try to show up to your game who aren't even part of it and offer you free drops and non-penalties and various things because they think it's going to make you feel better when really Brian and I want to beat each other as bad as we possibly can playing every shot the way it's supposed to be played.
And that has to do with pancakes and bacon because...
Because his grandmother is the one who instilled the play them all out, put them all out mentality in him. And that wouldn't have happened if she hadn't enticed him with pancakes and sausage.
All right. Well, that was kind of a key component of that whole story that I somehow missed.
I knew you were going to wrap it around and bring it back to me there. That's the kind of guy you are. That is the host that you are. Brian, by the way, if you get a chance to listen to our interviews with Mark Stewart, I did tell the story about the famed 187-yard marker in the 18th fairway at Tobacco Road, how I banged one over the green there and ended up losing to you by a shot on one of the craziest closings we've ever had.
Yeah, that was unbelievable. Crazy ending to a good match.
That's right.
All right, I'm going to shut you two down. Talking about...
Go ahead, Mitch.
All right, speaking of closings and wacky, far-out closings, here's your last Emergency 9 question. And this is a good one for somebody who's traveled as much as you have. What is the one golf course you wish everyone knew about?
Oh, and you have to tell me one again.
Yeah, no, this is one. I'm not giving you one and 1A.
I'll give you as many as you want, because I'm that kind of guy.
Okay, well, I'll give you my one, and then I'll give you a little couple of tidbits. How about that?
All right.
So the one I wrote down, nobody ever thinks of this destination or this location as a place that you want to go play golf. Bayside in Nebraska has been one of my biggest eye-openers of a golf course nobody has ever talked about, heard about, or ever even discussed, or is on any list, or is on anything anywhere.
It is so good and so much fun and such a blast. And man, I'm with you. It's one of my favorite places to get out to because it's so beautiful and it's so cool. And it's such a trippy golf course. And you're right. Everybody, they talk about all the other stuff in Nebraska. They talk about Wild Horse. And I think Bayside is twice the golf course that Wild Horse is.
Oh, absolutely. Hands down. And so that's might be the biggest one. I mean, it would be up against like the, you know, the Sand Hills and I love Prairie Club and Dismal River and Wild Horse, but nobody ever even mentions Bayside, and it is so good and it's so underappreciated and just under, it's not a big production. I mean, you go out there and the golf carts are kind of rickety and the clubhouse is kind of rickety and there's no cart paths, and it's just, you know, it's just great golf. I mean, it's unbelievable how good it is. That's my number one. You know, and we've been through a couple other places. I mean, I wanted to mention this course in the middle of nowhere in Utah called The Hideout that was designed by Forrest Richardson. I mean, it's like Bayside. Unbelievable how good it is. I mean, you're just blown away and nobody's out there. There's guys out there playing in their cowboy boots with cowboy hats on that can barely hit the ball. You know what I mean? But some other stuff that we've seen in the last little while, like, I mean, I didn't know much about Brora. Brora was unbelievable. Then we saw Tane. Tane was fantastic. We played Merker. I've never even heard of Merker until we showed up. I mean, I don't know. And I feel like I kind of know some of my golf. But I mean, dude, there are some of these golf courses that are in the middle of nowhere. I mean, Fraserburgh, these golf courses that, and I guess maybe they're all over Scotland. I mean, and if you appreciate golf and love the game, you're probably going to find thousands of them all over the place. These little golf courses that are fantastic, whether it's an entire golf course or just stretches of holes that are unbelievably good. You know, there's a lot of them, but, you know, I guess there's some that we should keep to ourselves and we shouldn't give up our secrets.
Maybe that's the case. Mitch is probably going to mock you for calling it Fraserburgh instead of Fraserboro.
I was quiet. I was quiet. All right. But I'm in total agreement. That's why.
You talk about, you know, places that have great stretches of holes, too. We talk about Strantz all the time on this show. We're big Mike Strantz fans. Todd Hill Farm is that way. The opening stretch from holes 1 through 7 are unbelievable. It's just great. He didn't manage to be able to keep that up throughout the whole golf course, and there's got some flaws in the golf course. But, you know, I keep telling people, if you go just and play those 7 holes and have a blast, you've done something. And you're right. There are all these courses that we run across every trip that we take that are new and different. When we did our Cape Breton Island trip, you know, we found golf courses there that were beyond Cabot, that were outstanding, and beyond Highlands Links. But you had places like Bell Bay, you had places like the Links. So there's so many great golf courses out there. And I guess maybe you're right. Maybe we should just stop telling people about them, and then we can be the only ones who play them.
Yeah, sometimes you want to feel that way. I mean, geez, that place in Monticello, The Hideout. I mean, geez, if I could play there every day of my life, I would. It's that great. I mean, the golf course is just beautiful. Every single hole is wonderful in these beautiful settings. And
is The Hideout near Salt Lake or is it near St. George?
No, it's not near anything. That's
what's
the issue.
What's it closer to?
It's closest to Moab.
Okay, all right. But
there's a phrase you don't hear that much. Closest to Moab.
So it's probably 4 hours from Salt Lake. It's probably 6 hours from Denver, and probably it's 8 hours from St. George. It's not near anything. It's the middle of nowhere.
Holy cow.
That's why they call it The Hideout.
And the middle of nowhere.
Those are great choices. Darren, you had a bonus question.
Yeah, one bonus question. You get an emergency 10. We've done this for a few of our very select VIP guests. We want to know what your favorite course you've ever photographed is, because definitely you look at golf courses differently when you're shooting them. And, you know, I want to know what's the place that just blew you away while you were out shooting, and then once you got into your room and looked on the computer and looked at what you got and just went, holy cow, this is just a great, great looking golf course.
Fortunately, there's been a lot, and I've been fortunate enough to meet people like Darren Bunch and a bunch of other people that have enabled me to get to some of these destinations to do what I do and do what I love. There's been a lot of great moments. There's been a lot of tough moments. There's been a lot of shitty moments, you know, trying to photograph stuff and photographing stuff. But I think the one, this is like trying to pick your favorite child. It's almost impossible. But there was one moment, and I still think it's one of my best photographs. I mean, I have a lot of really good ones, but this one was pretty special. I mean, I think only a few people appreciated it as much as I did. Some people didn't really like it, but maybe they did. But it was a morning. It was shitty. It was gonna rain really hard. I think it had been raining all night, and I didn't think I was gonna even get up. It was alarm went off at 4:40. I remember looking at the clock, and I went, "Oh God, I know it's been raining." And I looked outside, and I could tell that there was clouds because I couldn't see any stars or anything. But I decided to get up and walk up and look anyways. And so I got up and I walked up the hill and I looked where the sun was going to come up, and there was a thin sliver that was open. It was clear skies, a very thin sliver. And the rest of the skies were downright angry. And it was raining and there was lightning and thunder. And I went, oh my God, am I really going to do this? And I could tell that it was going to be something special. And I had been looking, there was one spot on this golf course where I knew that if I caught morning light at the perfect spot, it would be an epic shot. So I run down there and get my stuff on and get all my shit together and go get the golf cart and start heading out there. And I'm heading out there and it's thundering and it's lightning and it's raining. And I'm like, I'm going to die if I go out here. It's very possible I could get struck by lightning. And so anyways, I get out there and I still wasn't sure it was going to happen because the skies were changing so quickly. And I didn't, it was almost out of body, like the emotions and what it felt like out there. The wind was blowing a little bit, but the grandness of this landscape is amazing. And I was at the Prairie Club, and it was one morning where I caught a lightning bolt in a frame that was unbelievable. I think it's one of my best photographs. It's got to be one of my best photographs ever. I've got a lot of them, but the one that I caught the lightning bolt was amazing. I mean, I shouldn't have been out there. It was definitely a dangerous aspect to my job, and it was pushing the limits of what I should and shouldn't do. But it was a pretty special photograph, and I really love it. And I know a few other people really love it, and I know that they like it. But that might be the Dunes course at Prairie Club is definitely one of my favorites, and the images that I've shot at that place are epic and some of my best ones ever. Yeah, singling out one golf course, and that had to be it.
I remember that morning. Obviously, we were there at the same time and sharing one of the really cool Canyon Rim cottages, or cabins, I guess it is, there at Prairie Club. And I remember waking up much later, obviously, than you did, because I slept in that whole morning. But walking into your room as you got back and saying, Matt, it looked pretty bad out there. Did you get anything? And you just like lit up. You were like, well, I got one thing. I got a lightning bolt. And I was like, shut up. And when you showed it to me, it completely blew me away. It's interesting to note, and I don't know if we've told you this, Mitch, that photograph appeared in Golf Getaways magazine on a story we did about the Prairie Club and about Nebraska, but we've never put it on social media yet. We're kind of saving it for something special later this year. We're going to do a big contest, and I think that's going to kind of be the signature shot that we use to try to market the contest, because it's one of those pictures that when we do ever put it on social media, it's gonna get retweeted and reposted again and again, because it is truly, it just blows you away. The fact that you were able to get it just always amazes me.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't really trying. It just happened to be one of those, you know, situations where, I mean, I felt like I could get hit by lightning at any time. So when the sun came up, and it was probably only, the sun was probably only on the hole for maybe 30 seconds. And I just literally just sat there and clicked it and clicked it and clicked it and was like just praying to God really in the back of my mind that I wasn't going to get struck by lightning at the same time. So it was kind of I was scared and, you know, elated all at the same time. And it just was this weird experience where I was like, oh my God, is this really happening? And I can't even explain what it looked like out there. I mean, you can see from the image that it was pretty incredible. I mean, the image almost looks fake, but yeah, it was just one of those moments where you're just like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. And it was pretty amazing. And the Dunes course at Prairie Club is very, very, very cool. One of my favorites in the world.
Well, I had heard about that experience, and I can't wait to actually see the picture. Darren's keeping it from me because he thinks I'll get too excited about it. I'm glad you didn't get hit by lightning. It certainly would have tempered that story. But that's the kind of guy you are. We've been with you when the conditions haven't been great, and somehow you find a way to get it done in rain or shine. So we love having you here with us, and this is kind of what our trips are like. For those of you listening who can't figure it out, this is what we do. We have a great time. We sit around for hours and talk about the things we love: golf, photography, friendship, food,
hickories,
bunnies, milkshakes, hickories. It's all part of the experience. So, Brian, thanks for being with us, man. Obviously, we'll see you soon. And thanks for everything you're doing. I know there's a lot of people out there that love what you do as well, because you bring the world of golf right to them.
I appreciate that, and I'll keep doing what I love to do, and it's an honor to do so. And I thank my lucky stars every day that I get to do what I do, and I love it, and I appreciate guys like you helping spread the word and doing what you guys do.
All right, thanks from your Hickory brother here and your next belt brother there, and Darren, both of you. We'll talk to you. We'll see you again soon. And again, thanks to Brian Orr. You can find him at Brian Orr on Instagram, at Brian Orr Golf on Twitter, or at brianorr.com. You will love seeing his work if you haven't already. Thanks again for listening to Talking Golf Getaways. We will certainly talk to you soon. Tom Petty, keep running down that dream. So long.